Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Gibberish with Gerard. And I think let's go straight to the point. So I think today we're going to talk about education system. And for that, I have two of my friends. So first one is Goku, who will be reading Computer Science and Math in NUS this year. And I have Rishi, who will be reading Data Science in NTU this year.
Hi Gerard.
Hello.
Thanks
Gerard.
For having us.
Yeah, so, hi guys. Okay, I mean, to be fair, we don't really have a wide range of backgrounds in the discussion panel today because all three of us are products of the Singapore education system, and we all graduated from SGI, where we spent, you know, the last 6 years of our schooling lives. So not, you know, that much of a diversity that you would expect, but nevertheless, I think we do have some varying and interesting perspectives, and hopefully we can bring out some honest assessment of our education landscape in Singapore today.
Mm-hmm. I think it's worth reiterating this point, Gerard. So I think our points and our opinions are grounded in our own experiences, and they come from, for all three of us, we were in the IB program. Rishi was in the O-level track, and myself and Gerard were from the IP track in SGI. And as far as I understand, the IP track back then is a lot closer to the O-level back then than it is now. So I think our experiences and our comments will come from that sort of backdrop, that background. And as much as we hope that these points generalize to different systems of education in Singapore and around the world, it probably will not. And so a lot of our criticisms of the systems that we went through probably will not, probably have been solved or doesn't exist in other systems like the Poly, ITE, or the A-level mm-hmm. tracks. I think that's worth mentioning just at the outset.
Yeah. Alright, so a few days ago, right, in the election fever episode, we talked about the positive educational reforms, you know, that was introduced in Singapore that reduced the overemphasis on academic results. So I think one of the big ones included not having weighted assessments for primary 1, primary 2 students, removing media examinations for P3, P5, Sec 1, Sec 3 students, and also grading PSLE subjects in bands called achievement levels, instead of using, you know, the traditional way of, which is your T-score. So I think these are pretty much like welcome changes, because we had to go through the misery of having multiple media examinations, and, you know, also being seen as a PSLE T-score label after we finished our P6. You know, we were pretty much viewed as, you are a 260 guy, you are a 255 guy. And so, you know, with respect to all of these, you know, I think these changes are really good, but then again, you know, I'm not so sure, you know, does this reduce the academic rigor? Do you think it kind of compromises, you know, the motivation needed by students to study?
Okay, I'll address your point on PSLE. Yeah. I definitely don't think it reduces the motivation for a student, especially one who would be sitting in the new PSLE system, which will be implemented next year.
Yeah.
For example, if I'd be doing it, knowing, having full knowledge that I wouldn't have to be restricted in the sense that I would have a very specific T-score.
Mm.
Instead of having that, I would have a greater variety, because the grading system is much more granular. It used to be granular in the sense that,
yeah,
right? Because it would be A star, A to E, and then it would give you one score.
Yeah, three.
Now
score.
It's much less precise. In a sense, you could see it as slightly vague, but I say that it would provide students with a greater variety for choosing their secondary schools, which, and their respective streams, which is the ultimate goal of a PSLE student writing the PSLE. P6 student writing a PSLE.
Yeah.
Right? Would you not say it would actually motivate them further? Because think of it this way: you'll be comparing the old system.
Mm.
What the old system had was
the one that we
your through. Yes, the one that we had the we had the privilege of going through. It pitted us against everyone in the entire cohort.
Yeah, I mean that
through the concept, the calculation involved a standard deviation, which varied throughout the year, and student performances also varied throughout the years.
Mm.
But this time, this system compares you to yourself.
Yeah.
And I see that as a great motivation. Like, why would you not want to outdo yourself?
Mm. Yeah.
You'd want to be the best person to achieve whatever grades you're capable of achieving, right? Not have your grades marred by, or perhaps even enhanced by, the performance of the cohort. Why should you let the cohort decide your performance?
Google, what's your take?
Yeah, by and large, I do agree with a lot of these proposed schemes, and I think they're a welcome sort of change. Because I think the point of a primary school education, at least in my view, is to get students to be more interested in learning, to get them interested and curious about the world. And I think that if they are fighting, or they have societal and parental pressure to fight for, like, you know, a 2.26 something instead of a 2.4, 2.3 something, like, those kinds of granular differences may not really mean very much in terms of ability or skill, or those things are very arbitrary, right? And I think, by and large, this is a very good step. But I think, you know, maybe for the sake of sort of proposing an alternative point of view, but only for that sake, I think maybe I could talk about what is a sort of an ideal case. And an ideal case is where all students are very quickly able to show the kind of their preferred educational style. And if you knew how different students learned, then you could put students who learn similarly together. And what you could do then is to give them specialized treatment. And you could teach them in a certain way that will sort of, they would benefit the most from. Right, if the teacher goes too fast for a student who probably want to mull over concepts a little more, then that student will be left behind. Or if a student is going is capable of going a bit faster than that, then they may feel held back, and all of these things will hinder their education. And I think that is an important thing to have, right? Of course, the problem is that a lot of these differences, don't show up very early on. So some people bloom a bit later. Some people, you know, these kinds of differences exist. The second problem is that if you have these kinds of differences, that people will tend to look at you differently, right? So they'll say that, you know, if you're a bit faster, that you're better than someone who's not as fast, which is not a true thing.
Yeah.
It's definitely not true. So I think those sort of societal and, I mean, these are all cultural things that should change over time. And I think this is a good step to do that.
Okay, just like touching on a point you said earlier, right, about like late bloomers and stuff. Do you think it's kind of like unfair to put that kind of stress and expectation on a primary six student?
No, definitely.
Like, I mean, because if you look at, you know, some of the other countries in the world, they do not really have an examination that filters you out in primary six at such a young age, you know.
Yes.
Like most of the countries, you know, you spend your life pretty much in the same school from grade 1 to grade 10. Until you're introduced like a national-wide exam. So, I don't know, like, do you think it's too much of a thing to deal with at such a young age?
Yeah, I think so. I think I think you should let kids be kids.
Yeah.
And sort of enjoy themselves.
Let them enjoy their innocence of youth, so to speak.
Exactly. And so, I think, I think this does help go some way in sort of getting to that ideal. Yeah, it's a good step, I think.
And I suppose it's also a matter of the culture ingrained within parents of the students, because ultimately, well, to be quite frank, they would be the ones making by and large a majority of the decisions for their children, be it to enroll them in tuition or put basically lead to contribute to the amount of pressure on the kid. So I would say this, in this circumstance, you're not pitting your child as a parent, you're not pitting a child against the cohort, you're pitting a child against himself or herself. And you do so knowing that your child's performance won't be marred by anyone.
Yeah, all these sort of the way that the players in the system behave, i.e. the parents and the students, are sort of the sort of envelope for all these things is the sort of incentives that you create.
Yes.
And in this case, that's the grading system. And so if you have, you know, if you want sort of societal, cultural change, then the way to do that would be through the grading system that influences these incentives.
Okay. Or else, I mean, whatever the ministry does, becomes kind of meaningless, because the parents are the ones who will be more or less dictating what the child's supposed to do. So that's okay. I think we covered quite a bit about PSLE. So, okay, so now, assuming you finish PSLE and you're going to your secondary school life, I think another issue that we usually have in secondary school is those media examinations and your term assessments. So if you think about it, we have those CA1, SA1, CA2, and of course your eventual SA2, which is your final years. So what do you think? Like, do you think these examinations are necessary? like these, especially those media examinations, do you think they are necessary, or does it just bring about unwanted stress in the middle of your academic year?
Right. I think they're important to a certain degree, but I think what is also tacked on to it is something that is undesirable. Right. So let me explain. So I think with sort of, I mean, a lot of these mid-year examinations, SA1s, CA1s, are weighted in some way for the final score. And what that does is that parents put an undue amount of pressure on their students to do really well on it. And students to a certain degree also are pressurized to do extremely well on it, because they don't want to, you know, those kinds of differences make a significant impact overall. And so when they're put through those kinds of stressful scenarios, they kind of fear failing. And they're afraid of doing badly. Those kinds of things, I think, I disagree with. What is important, though, I think, with examinations, sort of assessments regularly, I think is important, because I think learning occurs when you have this sort of a feedback cycle. So when you do an exam, when you learn something, and then you do an exam, and that exam gives you some kind of feedback about whether you've achieved these learning objectives, and based on that, you can sort of improve. So I think, from my point of view at least, I think it's important to have these sort of assessments, and they should be fairly regular. And what they would help you to do is to assess yourself along the way, both for yourself, your parents, and the teacher, so they can cater these their teaching towards you, and you can improve yourself when you see your results and you get better. And I think what that would help you to do when they're sort of fairly regular is also sort of break this culture of fear of failing and being afraid to get things wrong. Because when you sort of do it so often, you tend to from the teacher's point of view, you also have to emphasize that, you know, doing badly is okay as long as you improve. You learn from them and you improve.
There's always room for improvement.
That's the problem we do have now, right? Because all these assessments, you know, contributes to a certain grade, to a certain mark.
Yeah.
And that eventually kind of contributes to your overall mark. So, and I think that's the problem we have, and it's just, I think, what you are trying to, trying to solve, which is basically to have these feedback loops, but make sure they're not graded. I mean, they can be graded, but make sure it does not count into your final score. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, to a large degree. I think to sum up, it's basically that you have regular, healthy assessments that give you feedback cycles, but without the fear of failure, so that you can improve constantly. You can have a lot of iteration cycles and constantly improve for the better.
Yeah, and then the thing is, you can have more than just three exams, right? I mean, you can have all those mini topical tests. They just test you on, you know, your particular understanding of a certain topic. And then you have the entire feedback cycle that happens. And then you move on to the next topic.
Exactly.
I suppose it can all be summed up in the form of the final examination at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, the final examination would be a good gauge of your, you know, overall understanding for the entire year. And I feel that if you get these many blocks right, I mean, I don't see why you would go wrong the final hurdle, because
it gives you that confidence.
The responsibility is on the student, however, to make sure that he or she does, in fact, improve.
But the thing is, right, I mean, that's what I'm saying. If he gets these things correct, if he's understanding, as in, okay, you find in problem A, in this first topic, you know, you have a certain problem, you address it, then you move on to the next topic. Instead of just having these, like, okay, there's 10 topics, and at the end of the third, I'll have one examination, and at the fifth, I'll have another examination, like that. Instead of going in that kind of a way, these small topical tests, which has no bearing towards your final grades or anything, it just allows the students to, you know, freely express themselves, as well as to really, like, it's a good reflection of whatever they have understood. And from that, the teacher, you know, can cater to the particular student on, like, you know, what he's lacking, and what kind of information he needs, what kind of help he needs. Maybe it could be the way of writing or something like that. Then you just help to, like, cover all these, you know, like, sort of flaws or errors you have.
And so eventually, the errors before the
final examination, I think you're pretty much well prepared, isn't it? It's not a problem anymore. Then you don't need to, like, worry about anything.
I think there's less fear of the final exam as well.
So I think it contributes greatly to a large extent. So I think that was a good thing. Richard, you have anything there?
I do have a question. So these exams, so when you remove these sort of things, are they also adding these term topic-based assessments along the way, or
I think the schools will continue to have topic based assessments,
mm-hmm.
because I feel that is, you know, I mean, if not, how would you know that whether students doing well or not?
Yep.
I mean, it might not be termed as mid-year examinations per se, but I think they would come up with different ways to of course.
But at the end of the day, you would say you'd want to detract them from grades.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want it to contribute to the you'd only want the the final examinations, SAT2 at the end of the year,
yeah.
to be the culmination of what you've understood throughout the year.
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, again, people can argue that, I mean, you're basing it off on one particular exam.
Yeah, so if you had a bad day, right?
If you had a bad day, then you have nothing much to fall back on.
And exactly, that's what the current system sort of allows.
Yeah, but
right?
I think that's when the teacher's inputs can come in, right? Because if you have been, you know, if you have been producing consistent results over the year in terms of topical-based assessments,
mm-hmm.
the teacher can say, all right, I mean, he has this score, but this score is not truly reflective of what his understanding is, because from what I know, he has a really good grasp of this particular subject.
So you say that the final score can be supplemented in some way by some kind of assessment on the teacher's part.
Yeah, because I mean, in secondary school, I mean, it's not a national wide exam or anything, right?
Right.
It's just from sec 1 to sec 2, sec 2 to sec 3. So I think I'm pretty sure the teacher would have a lot of say in what happens, you know, in terms of promotion. So I think you shouldn't really be a worry. You know, I think the teacher would know how a student is, and she can, you know, of course, back it up with his topical assessments.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that's our view about media examinations. Actually, before moving on to the next point, right,
mm-hmm.
I think you know, in our pre-discussion, I think Rishi brought up a really good point that although you know, we are removing media examinations, parents are kind of forcing their children to go to like extra enrichment classes or tuition classes to take these mock examinations.
Yes, and that was with the so-called pre-notion that these examinations are necessary because that's what they did in the past. So
yeah.
they see themselves as so-called of a model to, a role model to model their children around. But that, I would say, compromises in the learning because, as what you mentioned, what truly matters at the end of the day is the student's understanding, not how well he or she writes an examination just for the sake of a grade.
Yeah.
The understanding is what matters.
Yep.
Yeah, so I truly agree with Rishi regarding that point.
I agree with you as well.
Yeah. Alright, okay. So moving on, right? I think we spoke a lot about like things that are specific to the Singapore education system. So I think let's take a step back and let's look at the broader perspective. So do you think, you know, these so-called academic philosophies, you know, have they achieved their original intent? What do you guys think?
Okay, let's perhaps look at it from the perspective of what an education system is out there to achieve. So what the ultimate goal of an education system, regardless of country or wherever it's being implemented, firstly is to, I'd say, to arouse curiosity. What would make a student passionate about even beginning to think about this subject? What would his first impression be when he comes into a classroom one day? He sits on his desk, teacher comes up with a new topic. Today we're going to learn about so and so. What can an education system do to make sure that his curiosity is aroused? Because the impression, the initial impression that is given off by the teacher teaching that new subject, it sticks. It's something that doesn't go away unless it's a very drastic change.
Yeah.
I would say that's one thing which remains. The second goal, I would say, would be to deepen understanding. What can an education system do to ensure that the student begins to appreciate more of why certain things occur the way they occur in, let's say, a field of science or something along that sense? And the final goal would be to see how the degree of practicability of this particular subject being taught. That's what I would consider the goals of an education system would be.
Yeah. So I mean, I think we have to critically analyze whether you know, this kind of mechanisms and the kind of incentives that the current educational systems that we're familiar with and sort of encourages meets those ultimate goals of the education system, which we want it to do, right? So I think, like, for the sake of analysis, like when I was thinking about this, I think, like, kind of commonsensically, you can kind of split your education into three segments. Like the first one would be your pre-learning phase, Like when you said, when the teacher introduces the subject to you and tells you why it's important, maybe. Then the second part would be like the learning phase, when like a lot of the incentives, like the grading systems, drive your learning forward. Like if you're doing it yourself, then there are other things that drive you to continue learning a certain thing. Like if you're learning it yourself, then it could be some other more passion, you know, passion and things like that. Like you want to get, there's some kind of end and you want to use this as a means to get there. And like finally, there's this sort of application. So after you learn, you want to somehow apply it, like you said as well, to something that is physically sort of significant. And sort of that application, different systems of education focus on different things, I guess. Like Poly and ITE were built to sort of get this application, to focus around this application, and maybe like the
accessibility
or practicability of what you're learning. And they they revolve around that. And what the systems that we are more familiar with maybe is like not so much practicability, or maybe not as emphasized.
Because I think IT and Poly is like they're preparing the majority of the people to prepare them for the workforce, right? So
yes.
I think that's the biggest difference.
Yeah. So we have to see whether that link is important. Right. So like I think in the first phase at least, it's important that we get we make sure that students are well aware. Like I think for me personally, I don't know about you guys, but I think for me personally, when a new subject was introduced, if I don't really see the point of why the subject is important, I lose interest immediately. And I wish like this was more emphasized, in the sense that I wish they would tell you that this is the impact of this in real world sort of situations. Why is like the math that you're learning useful outside of the kind of confines of the classroom, right? I don't know.
I think that's very similar to what I particularly faced in lang-lit classes.
Because
if you think about it, right? I mean, I was given like what two pieces of book to like read and analyze and like, you know, see what do character trait analyzation. Like there's so many things that happens in the book. But eventually I don't see what's the point, you know what I mean? I'm not choosing a career path that's related to literature or anywhere close to it. I think all three of us are not doing anywhere close to it. But then again, you know, we are kind of being forced to learn this. And there's no real, I mean, I don't think there's enough explanation given to why, you know, is literature important? I mean, why is it important? How can we use it in our day-to-day lives? You know, I don't see the kind of meaning or purpose behind it. And to be very frank, you know, I would say the entire 2 years, I just went through just, you know, reading notes and like just preparing myself for the final exam, because that exam will give me a grade that will prepare me that will kind of determine, you know, like the course and the uni that I want to go to.
So where do you think the system so-called was not successful? It didn't convince you in helping you to understand why this mattered to you in the first place.
Yeah,
like
I mean,
second aspect, like the deep understanding of why this.
I think if you ask me, I didn't get hooked onto it in the first place.
Yeah, okay,
I feel, I mean,
fair.
I don't know, there's just, I didn't really get the link. I mean, what's the point of studying literature? To me, I was studying because it contributes 7 marks to my final score. That's it. I mean, that was my only incentive for pursuing literature.
I think like now in hindsight, I think we can all agree that like literature and language is important. It's hugely important, especially given the recent elections. Like the way that we get and process information is crucial. The way that we are able to criticize texts, the biases, the kind of point of view that the writer is trying to impose on the reader. All of these are crucial skills, both when you're trying to take in information and when you're trying to synthesize new information. Like I feel like it's important that these kinds of things are emphasized, and I think that would have helped us to appreciate the subject a lot.
I mean, if you put it in that way, you know, if someone had told me about all these things, then of course I think I would have been, I would have
it helps
at least realized,
interest.
You know, what's the purpose of learning literature?
Exactly.
Given,
like even with math, right? I mean, if I think a lot of people, like people bash things like the quadratic formula for it being overly sort of esoteric.
Yeah.
Like I think the real value of math for the general person who may not really use these specific formulas on a day-to-day basis is that almost everyone deals with sort of problems in everyday life that can be quantitatively attacked, right? In terms of some kind of quantitative skill where they can analyze the results of something would help them improve their solution to the problem. And I think that if more emphasis was put on the process of problem solving, right, instead of the specific sort of mechanisms in terms of the procedure and the algorithm of solving this problem from step A to step B, and you just regurgitate that procedure, right? Any computer can do that, right? Treat students as humans.
Yeah.
And I think what you can do with humans is that you can tell them the general principles of problem solving, right? How do you approach a problem generally, right? And that not only helps them solve this particular problem, but it helps them solve problems outside of the classroom as well.
So teaching them a general sense of how problem solving should be implemented is a good thing.
Yeah, and yeah, to tell them how they should use it and why it's important outside of...
But one would argue that if it's done to too specific a degree, it may compromise the purpose of even teaching problem solving in the first place. Like, for example, for my O-level practicals, for example, what happened was, let's say, I believe it was physics, we were provided with a sample experiment which we needed to do. I believe it was something to do with pendulum. I can't recall off the top of my head.
It's a pendulum, right?
Yeah, I think so. We had a mock practical. We were taught exactly what to do in terms of the precise measurements, the measurements which we needed to do,
the
conclusions which we needed to draw, the relationships which we needed to ascertain, and the final, even the format, word to word, because of so and so relation, because of the so and so observations, there is a relationship between the so and so, and that sort of feels very. It's like a cut and paste template. It's like a cookie cutter template, which can be applied from one place to another. But it's just specific to that domain. How can it didn't?
I don't know.
Yeah.
For me, it just takes out the practical out of the practical.
Yeah, exactly. You're just learning how to do one specific task and that task alone. It sort of, I feel like it compromises on certain aspects of learning and like arousing curiosity, like why something like this would occur.
Yeah.
I mean, because you already know it may occur in such a way. What if you're given a completely novel scenario in which you're expected to perform an experiment? How would you know, how would you even know what to perform? How would you come up with a question to ask?
Right, exactly.
What is your basis of determining what is the problem statement?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those things, it's exactly the point that I'm trying to bring across, is that you should not teach people precise procedures, but general problem solving techniques.
Just spoon feed them.
I think in the context of the O level practical, right? I mean, I think one of the things that people face generally in terms of problem solving outside of in the real world that school doesn't really prepare them for by and large, is sort of not just solving a problem, which is, I think, generally agreed to be sort of the easy part. What is really difficult is to look at a real-world problem and distill it into something, into some kind of problem statement, some kind of question to answer that is actionable with the skills that you have. So you might be very good with your skills, but if you don't know what to attack, then there's no real use, right? So I think like that needs to also be something that is taught. I think the IB did this quite well with the EEs and the IAs, because you kind of get the opportunity to come up with problems to solve based on things that you observe. Like that's a pretty useful skill. It also, I think it's also important that especially things like science practicals tell you about dealing with the uncertainty of the real world, because there's an abundance of uncertainty in the real world, and you need to be comfortable with it. And you need to know how to deal with results that don't quite go your way.
So you don't get a desired result in your extended essay.
Yeah.
Oh no, this is an experiment failed, but what can I learn from it? What can I what were some of the observations which were still made despite your hypothesis not going according to plan?
I think in EEs and IAs, no result was still a result.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not penalized for.
Yeah, in fact you're rewarded for
As long
as you
process,
make a sound judgment on why and a justification as to why certain things may have occurred because they occurred. You have so-called achieved the purpose.
That's the purpose of an experiment, isn't it?
Yeah, that I'm a big fan of.
Yeah.
Like just one last thing that I wanted to bring off, I think apart from all of these, is also to think about the sort of, during the sort of process of learning, whether the incentives that you're presenting in terms of grading systems is really going to achieve the outcomes that Rishi had mentioned earlier of what an educational system should achieve, right? And I think a good analogy for this, which almost is a direct analogy, is maybe like an AI system, right? So if you were trying to build some kind of artificially intelligent cleaning robot, and you told the robot that you wanted a room cleaned, right? Perhaps the one that we're in now. Then, Rishi's room. No, but so we should. So you'll tell the robot, you give the robot a dirtiness value, right? And there's a scale.
Yeah.
And you tell the robot, and the robot's sole purpose in life is to reduce that dirtiness value, right? Is to get lower loss functions. And I think like what you'd expect it to do is to get better and better at cleaning the room. But the robot really has no notion of what cleaning the room is. It only knows that it has to reduce the dirtiness value.
That's what it's designed to optimize to do.
Yeah. So like what it will try to do is to look at where the dirt is coming from. The dirt is coming from Rishi.
Yeah.
And so what is the solution there?
Oh no.
You eliminate Rishi. Right. So like that's not really what you wanted the robot to do. But like because of the incentives that you create, which is very one-dimensional,
that's
the outcome. And that's like complete the antithesis of what you wanted to happen.
Yes.
Mm.
And I think there is a very clear analogy there to the current sort of incentives of grading. That if you, that, you know, Singapore does pretty well in sort of global assessments like PISA and so on. But, you know, just because, you know, like if you're not interested, like we were discussing, if you're not really interested in what you're trying to learn, then you're sort of incentivized to sort of memorize by rote. And the point and the result of that, and then also owing to the very rigid mark schemes and very, very close-ended questions that expect very specific answers, right? That that people will generally try to spot questions and try to memorize only what they need to, and they don't really reach that understanding that they would want to achieve, right?
It's just regurgitation almost. Like.
Yeah, and you know, again, a computer could do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like you want to do something that is more unique than that, and like
it's
I think
almost comparing an SEQ structured essay question with an SBQ, something you haven't seen at all, like unseen prose being a better judgment of one's ability versus something which can simply be rote memorized.
I think on a structural level, that's a good way to improve things, is to sort of have people apply the concepts they've learned in novel scenarios rather than give them scenarios that you've prescribed.
Yes.
Right? That doesn't help.
Yeah.
But then again, it's a small issue there because you're kind of forced again to write in a particular way. I mean, you're not open to, like, I feel even in the SPQ, right? I mean, the issue is teachers kind of spoon feed you the way you're supposed to structure the essay. And I mean, of course, I mean, you would say the points, I mean, you're applying whatever you learned, but then again, you're applying it in a very fixed way that's taught by your teacher, and there's no room for like other kinds of, you know, creativity in your essay.
That I still think is open to interpretation, right? I mean, the, like, okay, well, I think what a teacher shared with me in, when I was studying for the O-levels, like, social studies, actually, when we were taught to refer to an unseen text and we were supposed to determine its purpose, objective, outcomes, so on and so forth. If I'm not wrong, how they said the teachers would grade it would be to see if you have identified the goal. And that is something which I believe can only come with practice. So when you say it can be structured in whatever way, I suppose there's still some merit in saying that there can be variety in ways that you would structure your answer, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think
a format is bound to be there, but whether or not you arrive to the point is what should be tested.
But you
anything,
are penalized
right?
for structure in a sense, right? In some cases. You are kind of
if the structure compromises the understand, like what a casual reader could understand from what you're trying to write, then yes, I suppose you can be penalized. But
no, but I don't think that's a problem. I think the problem is that no matter what you are trying to apply, there's still always this bound rule you're supposed to follow, because eventually you know you have to start it off with this, you know you're supposed to end it off with this, then the in between parts are just filling up, which is basically the application bit.
Yeah, that doesn't really.
Yeah.
Inspire creative, innovative thought in that solution space.
Just seeing whether you can fill in the blanks sort of thing. Just that the blanks are what you understand from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only sort of what you said is a one-dimensional judge of whether or not you understand something.
Yeah. And you know, when will you ever have to use that kind of structure outside of that exam?
Yeah, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, anyone asks you, like, explain this to me.
You're not going to go and duplicate that structure. Like, that's not a useful skill.
Yeah, so I think these are some issues.
Yeah. I think, ultimately, I think we can all agree that, I think we should also say, just for this, as another disclaimer,
mm-hmm.
that I think, like, teachers probably know this and are aware of these problems more than any of us because they deal
mm-hmm.
with these kinds of things every day. And I have full faith in our teachers. I think we are very good quality teachers who constantly try and optimize our learning objectives.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have a lot of respect for our teachers.
Yeah.
And I don't think this gets said enough. And I think you should go and thank your teachers if you have your teachers next to you. But, you know, like, I think ahead of all of these, like, people are trying to solve these issues. These are difficult issues. They don't have straightforward
mm-hmm.
answers. On a personal level, like, if you notice that this mismatch exists, then you can do something on your own. You can kind of make the effort. So if you see, like, if you see that, you know, the reason for doing something is not clear, go and ask your teacher about it, or go and learn about it yourself. You can be proactive in that sense, right? If you see that the machine is not well oiled, you can, you know, this acts as the lubricant, right? And, you know, when you go on to look at the incentives that these grading systems are encouraging, you can choose to reject that narrative. And I think to a large degree, it probably will help you in the longer term, because, like, I think generally if you try and understand what you're learning, that leads to longer term retention. So, like, if you learn something for this exam and you really truly understand it rather than you memorize something, you don't have to memorize it again for the next exam.
Yeah.
Because
you
still
know
there.
Exactly what it's going to
You understand it, right? There's no it's a lot easier to do that second exam. So I think it's a better longer term strategy even within the current incentive
structures.
Focus
for what you refer to as the deep understanding of something.
Exactly.
I think it's appreciating it for what it is, not for the sake of something.
Okay, so I think we're there. We have pretty much come to the end of this episode. So before we say goodbye, I think so let's just ask, you know, final thoughts. So we'll start off with Rishi or Goku?
You can go first.
Goku,
you start with Goku. So what are your final thoughts to summarize everything?
I think that really was my final thoughts is that there are large structural problems. We're doing well thus far. Singapore has been making good progress, I think.
Mm.
And we should continue to work towards an ideal of reducing that mismatch, bettering incentives. And I think on a personal level as well, we have a role to kind of, oil the machine. On a personal level, as individual players within this system, that is bound by these mechanisms and incentives, we have a role, we have a choice to sort of say that this is not right, and on a personal level, I'll make this choice to learn about it myself or to understand it myself and sort of try and get closer to the ideal. Right? I think that helps the system a little bit. It helps the teachers. It makes the whole learning process work better.
Yeah, definitely.
And just to build on what Goku said about personal responsibility to educate oneself, I would say try to distance yourself from the fear. I think this was mentioned before, fear of not getting a desired result. Like you never know when one particular result which you were expecting didn't turn out to be. It could be due to a variety of reasons, but I guess it's your job to understand that.
Enjoy the
sometimes
process.
It just happens. Your job is to understand why it happens and be able to justify it in that way.
Like,
so in that sense, don't fear failure.
So I think what it's exactly trying to say is, like, enjoy the process of it. I mean, the process can be a difficult one, but I mean, you shouldn't be scared of the failure that comes in the end.
Mm-hmm.
If you truly enjoy it, if you truly understand everything in it, then that failure doesn't mean anything.
And the objective has been pretty much achieved.
It's just a grade. It's just
you have
something
learned
on
something.
Paper.
Yeah.
So, I mean, personally, if you ask me, like, I feel, given the fact that I think most of my listeners or, like, target audience are, like, students who are in uni or going to uni this year. So I feel like whatever you can take away from our particular conversation would be that when you are going to start your uni, when you are going to learn a new module, for example, try to, like, you know, yeah, you know, think about what's the purpose of it. What are you intending to learn out of it? What are you trying to understand out of it? And really try to find a purpose behind it, because you, again, you know, you do not want to fall into this cycle where you're just learning a particular module because you're asked to do so, and eventually you need it in order to get your degree. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the kind of thing that we generally disagree with as a whole. So yeah, I think that's very important, and hopefully you guys can take away that small, tiny message that we have in our podcast. So
I think that's a nice way to end it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think
very well put.
Yes, yeah, so I think with that we have come to the end of the episode. So thank you for all your feedback and, like, all the support you guys gave for the previous episode for Election Fever. I think I didn't really expect that kind of, you know, following. So I think that was really good. Thank you for that. And yeah, I think that's it for this episode. And until the next episode, goodbye.